Hello, and welcome to episode number 43 of Investing from the Beach. I'm your host. I'm Chris Hansen, and I've got my fine, distinguished co-host with me today, Mr. Chris Lamb.
Hello, everyone. It's Chris Lamb.
And if it's your first time listening to the show, quick review on the podcast. The podcast is about time freedom. Some people call it financial freedom. We think that's a misnomer. It's really time freedom is what you're trying to get to, where you have, it's one thing to have money making money for you. It's another thing to have your money making money for you, and you have to do little to no work. People in real estate call that passive income, but we have yet to find somebody that makes great money off passive income that isn't putting a lot of time into earning that passive income, either managing the properties or managing their managers. So we actually did it through the stock market. We both worked at IBM. I'm about 18 years older than Chris. We were both in sales. As I had my eye on the door, Chris was coming in the door. I met him when he was an intern. We overlapped by a couple of years. I was able to leave the workforce when I was about 40. And Chris, a lot smarter than I am, he was able to leave when he was at about 30. And we developed a friendship in our IBM days. I guess we were talking a couple episodes ago. I'd forgotten about this, but Chris got tasked with helping me with something. And I guess I blew him off the first request he made. And then once I realized that I had free cheap labor, I jumped on the opportunity. We developed a great friendship and relationship. I used him and abused him from a work perspective for a little bit, and we developed a realized we had a shared interest in the stock market and has grown over the years.
Let me finish my intro. The past class you were teaching.
Let me finish my intro, and then you can talk. And so we've had tons of discussions about what it takes to get to time freedom. We normally don't talk over one another when we're talking without the recording on.
Hey, but here we do it. What I'm trying to say is it has to do with what you just said.
I know, but I'm going to forget the important thing. Is that this is all about
important about how to think.
It's how to think.
You won't forget that.
I know. All right, your turn. Go.
No, I was just saying. I was in your class, and you had mentioned that. When you first met me, and you know just how we started the relationship, and you were referencing something about a trick you learned that in order to get people to do nice things for you just kind of buy them stuff.
Yeah.
And yep. I always thought, man, Hansen was such a cool guy, and he was just like, he cared about me so much, and just about young kids growing up and learning, that he bought me a subscription to Investor's Business Daily, the newspaper.
Yep.
And it was, a few hundred dollars. And he bought me, I think, a year or two subscription. And so now I know.
Yeah, that was the trick. It wasn't friendship. I was totally buying you. You just didn't know it.
At the time, I guess, for our audience, there was a lot of, revenues that IBM gets from selling PCs. And a lot of times the end users, the customers, they don't, or the resellers, they don't report the revenues. And when they're in the certain territories, the IBM rep gets paid for that. And my job was to match up these revenues to the territory in our team. And so Chris, I think, was, in charge of retail, or he was responsible for a lot of the retail accounts. And so, he's being nice to me so I can code a lot of things retail when, we don't know what it belongs to. So, I would actually, I was probably 80% of his sales for a number of quarters.
In the third world country, we call that a bribe.
Yeah.
In the U.S., we call it a fee.
Yeah, exactly.
And IBM, we call it.
He probably took about 0.25% of his commission check, to pay for my Investor's Business Daily subscription.
But you know what? In all seriousness, it was, and I didn't do it that way, but I'll take the grief for it. But it was money incredibly well spent.
Hey, so, thanks for letting me add that extra fried egg to the fat burger we had.
Did I buy that?
Very generous.
I spent $4 on you rather than $3. I'm a big giver. So anyway. If you know us, we get along great. If you're new to the show, you'll find there's a great level of mutual respect, and we have a lot of fun with stuff going on. So in today's episode, Chris and I were at I'll call it a networking event. What really happens is that there's a group. If you go on to Meetup, any of the listeners, go on to meetup.com. It doesn't matter what city you live in, and do a search on Cashflow 101. And sometimes it's Cashflow one word, sometimes it's Cashflow two words. But see if you can find games in your geography. I happen to co-host a couple of games here in Southern California. Dig around, you can find them. There's one we run in Cerritos. There's another one we run, and I co-host one in Glendale. I can't remember what they're called, and what they're called doesn't matter, but you can dig around, you'll find it. And we were at an event last week, and one of the people there was talking about, basically you get together and play this game. It's kind of like Monopoly, but it's a much better sample of the way you can look about how running your own finances. While we're there, as part of the event, we all stand up and talk, you know, take 30 seconds and then introduce ourselves. And one guy stands up and he talks about wanting to, he's not real fond of his property manager, and he's thinking about starting a property management business. And what he said was, I really don't like my property manager. I asked around all my buddies that own real estate, and they've got the same complaints that I do. Can't find a good property manager. And he said, you know, in all their opinions, the property manager didn't address the needs of the real estate owner. So he had this brilliant idea to say, hey, maybe I'll just go start a property management business. And so as soon as he said that, you know, the hair on the back of my neck stood up. I looked over at Chris and I could see you jutted your chin out, so I can tell you were ready to say something. But we thought we'd go through and talk about not that specific person. It's not addressing whether it's a brilliant idea or a dumb idea or whatever, but just the mindset that goes into the ideas of coming up with a new business. And we'll use this one as a test case.
That sounds good.
Oh, that's it? I thought you were going to talk, you're going to have something brilliant to follow up with that.
No, that was brilliant.
So,
or you're about to say something brilliant.
Yeah, no, I figured I'd let you lead with brilliance, but you can out-brilliant me on this one. So my guess is for someone, we'll take a property management business, just because this guy talked about it and it's an interesting business to speak about, especially from two guys with a stock market background. But my guess about the complaints that they had with the property manager that they currently use would be any number of combination of, you know, the rental unit sat vacant for too long, in their opinion, and or it took too long to maybe get it cleaned and prepped and ready for the next showing or the next tenant. The property manager probably didn't place properly screened tenants into the units. Maybe the unit got trashed by the prior tenant, and or basic repairs look to be very expensive, you know, when they're hiring them out to get them done. As I was thinking about that list as we're putting the podcast together, it was a reaffirmation of why I'm not interested in owning rental real estate. There's all these.
I think it's comparable to trying to hire a good employee for your business, right? Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And this guy is probably, most people have an expectation of the property manager to treat the property like it was them, the owner.
Yes.
You can't expect someone to treat it like it's yourself. So when you have that, you're going to have good luck, right? They're not going to care.
It's an interesting thing too. You said that, you say it's kind of like hiring an employee for your business. The difference is though, if the employee does a phenomenal job, in theory, that employee could grow your business dramatically. Mm-hmm. If they're a great salesman or if they come up with a new product design or something like that. If you get a property manager, how much can they really grow your business? I mean, if you're vacant for a year, you know, you put somebody in there for a month and, you know, your year-to-year comparisons are astronomical. But assuming that you've got a solid tenant, what can that property manager really do to increase your revenues? And all he can do is put a tenant in there, and all he can do is reduce the expenses, the maintenance expenses. And it's not even reducing maintenance expenses. It's reducing the costs for getting the maintenance expenses addressed.
Yeah, I mean, I think in real estate, it's really just keeping the lights on, right? It's you keep the business running. It's not really growing it. How can you grow that same property?
Because you're capped by rents in the neighborhood.
But in the sense of hiring a property manager, it's like you're starting or you have a business and it requires a certain employee that provides a certain function. Mm-hmm. And you expect that you have the best people working for your business. It doesn't work that way all the time. They're hard to find.
Correct. Yeah, it's interesting, too, with the property manager is that in the rental real estate business, there is a cap on the annual revenue per year. You know, you take the number of doors times the number, what the average rent is or what the rent is per door, multiply that math or do that math, multiply it out. That's the max revenue that you can get off that. Now you can go and say, well, if I, you know, if I put in a washer dryer, if it's a fourplex or a plex of some sort, and you can get some laundry revenue, or, you know, depending on the other amenities that are available in the building, you know, if it's a big building, maybe you put in a gym, or other little things you can do, but it's small nickel and dime things, but it's not dramatically impactful revenue that you see on a monthly cash flow basis. Now, somebody who's in the business, who's in that business of selling it, they're going to say, yeah, but you don't understand. If you can bump the rents by $50 a month, and if you've got four units, let's say it's a fourplex, so that's $200 a month, that's $2,400 a year. You do the math on that, that small little bit, when you put a gross rent multiplier on that, you'll see that that has a huge impact on the overall value of the building when the time comes to sell. And when people say that, I look at them and laugh and go, that's awesome. You can't spend that money. So it's great that your building went from being worth $1 million to $1,100,000 or $1,050,000 or whatever the property price went up to, but you can't spend that. And the only way to access that is either to cash out, or you got to go into debt to take out a loan to access it. Or people say, well, I'll do a 1031, I go into a bigger building, which now says you've taken on more debt, right? And your cash on cash return ends up being the same. And you can only grow so big, and you can only handle so many doors. But that's the real estate concern. Let's go back to the property management side. If you're fortunate to get good tenants and you've got a good property manager, the real estate business can be a breeze. And it can be viewed as almost passive because it requires little to no effort on the part of the owner, assuming the property manager's doing what they're supposed to do and the tenant's doing what they're supposed to do and stay in the building. But once that tenant moves out, now it's a roll of the dice, right? And the word passive goes out the window because now the property manager has to become active, and the owner is now a little bit more active too, watching the potential loss of cash flow, depending how long that unit sits vacant, as well as what the maintenance expenses are to get it back up and prepped so it's ready for the showing of the next tenant. And so at that point, it's no longer a hands-off endeavor. What I thought was interesting, this guy says he wants to start a property management business, and he figures that he can do it because he knows what an owner is looking for. And he knows how thinks he can provide that as a property manager. And he commented and he said, the property managers don't have a clue. And I heard that and I thought, you know, you may have found the one guy that doesn't have a clue. But I got to believe if somebody's been in the property management business for a while, they probably have had enough complaint calls from owners that they have an understanding what it is. You know, because the interesting thing from a property manager perspective is if you say that, let's say that the rate is 7% is what they're going to charge for management fees. So if it's a $1,000 rental, they're going to get $70 a month. And if you look at that and you say, all right, so if I take Southern California, let's say the average rent is $2,000. So that says you're making $140 a door on average with average rent. How many of those doors do you need before it becomes a worthwhile business opportunity? So if it's seven times, what did I say, 140 per
door, you said?
Per door. So how much is that a year? So it's $24,000 times seven. What's my math here? So each door would yield a little over $1,600.
Oh, you're talking about 140 a month,
yep,
per door?
140 a month. So if you take 2,000 a month times 12, mm-hmm, right, it says the tenant pays on average 24,000 a year, and the property, yep, manager gets 7% of that. So they get 1680, so ballpark $1,700 a year on that. So if they're managing 10 doors, they make $17,000. They're managing 100 doors, they get $170,000, a little bit under that, I'll round up. So if you've got 100 doors that you're managing, average rent being $2,000 apiece, that says that the revenue stream for the property management business is $170,000 per year. If you've got 100 doors, how much staff do you need you know, you want to have enough staff so that they are adequately busy at all times. And so I don't know what the staffing ratio is on a door. I looked it up a little bit. I saw something. Some guy in Australia was talking. He said, generally, you look to have one staff per every 85 doors.
Man, you have a lot of time freedom.
Now, the scary thing is...
You thought about trying to get into the property management business?
No, you know what? Well, it goes to say, I wonder if I put more time into thinking about it than the guy that wants to start the business.
You probably did.
You know, which goes back to the point we talked about in the last episode. You find somebody that has a business mind, and you pick their brain a little bit. I don't know squat about property management business, but I can think it through for 30 minutes, you know, and kind of what about? And probably be pretty close. I'm not going to capture all of it, but I had a reasonable idea on it.
I remember the guy tried to ask me about, I guess, what he's doing, whether it made sense, or because I think he said the comment I made back to him was, don't find a good property manager, or just don't look for a property manager, right? You shouldn't even have a property.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
And then the I think he was just kind of, made him think a little bit. He's like, "What? These guys kind of know something that he doesn't." So he think he was curious. He shared with me his background, and he was investing in the stock market. He was burned, right?
Okay. Yep.
And it was because he learned something, and it was an app. He didn't have the operating system, and so the app was not compatible, or it wasn't even running well at all, and so lost money. And then lost confidence, stopped looking at the stock market. And I don't think he understood his goals. And so he automatically just went to chase the dollars again and said, let's get into real estate. And then he bought rental properties, I think, with his siblings, mm-hmm, and a friend or something. And so they had a partner. And during the process of... you know, searching for a property manager, he realized that there wasn't any good ones out there and decided to, hey, maybe it makes sense to let me start my own property management business.
So he's creating a job. He's not starting a business.
Yeah. And you see, when you don't have a roadmap or a plan, you know, the wind is blowing you, whatever. You're saying, oh, this sounds neat. Oh, that sounds neat. And so when he asked me, he said, should he do that? You know, should he do it? And I asked him, what's your goal? What are you trying to do? And then he realized it's like, you know, he heard the concept of time freedom. He realized he's trying to chase time freedom. And this won't allow him to do it. Mm-hmm. And then that's when he shared, you know, he was trying to do it through the stock market and all that, and just never spent time to learn, you know, and never spent time to develop the operating system.
You had the best line. And I don't know if you said it to him. You said it under your breath to me.
Mm-hmm. Talk about starting the property management business? Yeah. Yeah, I mean...
Well, you said the line about the plumber. What was your line about the plumber?
You know, I didn't know that, because he said something down the lines of, I'm going to start a property management business, but I wasn't sure I heard it correctly. Mm-hmm. And then when I verified it, I'm like, in my head, I'm thinking, the hell, the next time you have problems finding a plumber, you're going to... start a plumbing business. And then, you know, if you have a hard time, you know, finding a good electrician, you're going to start an electrician business. It's like, what's next?
Exactly. Then you'll have a gardening business pretty soon. Mm-hmm. You're a master. You can do all of it.
Exactly. And I was saying, yeah, you're going to have a hard time finding a gardener as well. And guess what? He's going to launch a gardening business.
And it's cool. If you got a passion for it, you want to do it. By all means, go at it. But he doesn't want to be a property manager.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to be a gardener. He doesn't want to be a plumbing contractor, plumbing hirer, or run an electrician business. Right? He wants his properties managed well.
Even take a step back, he's looking for money.
Yes. Yes.
And it still leads to you're really in search of time freedom, whether you know it or not. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't know what you're going to title this episode or this podcast, but we said, should you start a business, right? Really that question. And why I want to address that question is because people, you know, how many people we talk to always has ideas to start businesses. And then they never ask, you ask them why, they never really have a good answer. And I think it goes back to looking at the money triangle or the cash flow quadrant, right? If you're looking at Kiyosaki stuff, but it really, you're looking at ways to make money. And most people think that they're going to have the financial freedom or the time freedom by starting off a small business or just starting any type of business. And usually the progression is we're going to be employee first and, you know, we hate our jobs and we think we could do better, you know, with time freedom or having, you know, independence, right? Because yes. We'll start our own business and we could retire early, right? The FIRE acronym
mm-hmm. yep.
that you mentioned.
Financially independent, retire early.
Retire early. So, yep. You know, a lot of people are catching on that. It seems like it's a wave that's going around in social media.
Yes.
Right. But so the way people do that is that start a business and then they fall into the same trap of, man, I'm not having the time freedom and it's just trading a job.
Yes.
And you mentioned, what was your definition, entrepreneur?
It's somebody who is willing to work 80 hours for themselves so they don't have to work 40 hours for somebody else.
Yeah. So that's what ends up happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then usually they're excited about it because, you know, they have this freedom to manage themselves. And so they get very excited the first year or two or so. And then after that, right, you realize it's, man, I haven't hit my goals. Even if the money's flowing, it's overloaded with work.
Yep. I have no time.
Yeah.
I had an interesting call earlier this evening from a podcast listener out of Detroit. I won't use his name. I think his name was Robert. And he was calling. He said, hey, I've been listening to the podcast. He owns a small business up there. I think it's a small manufacturing firm. And he said, I had to call you. He goes, I listen to you guys in the morning as I go to the gym. He goes, I love what you say. He said, I keep thinking about the term jail with a door. He said, I started this business about 10 years ago. He said, I've been doing it really well, or doing very well at it. He said, but man, it's just tiring. And he said, I realize it's cool, kind of, that I own my own business. He said, but my business owns me. And it really is jail with a door. He said, I go into jail at 8 a.m. I get out at 5. He said, but I never, I leave to go home and sleep and hang with the family and do my stuff. He said, but I still have to be back in jail at 8 a.m. the next morning, Monday through Friday. And he said,
I love it that he recognizes that the business owns him.
Yes. Yeah. I thought it was cool. And he said, I'm so intrigued with what you guys do from a trading perspective. Tell me more. So we had a long discussion about that. But one other thing, if go down the path. Let's say that guy really does have a passion to be a project manager, a property manager. For whatever reason, he's not doing it for the money. He really enjoys whatever all the tasks are that a property manager does.
I think you could teach pigs to sing too.
Well, we got to have somebody that does property management.
Yeah, right? Passionate property managers.
That's it, PPE.
Yeah.
But you think about it, because you know we're going to keep convincing people one at a time to stop being property owners, right? So there's going to be a lot of property out there looking for somebody to buy it and manage it. So there's got to be somebody.
Very caring insurance salesman.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. But I think from his view, the perspective, perception I got, I think you confirmed it in your discussion with him. He was seeing a lot. One, he felt he wasn't getting the service that he wanted. And he was seeing that he and his buddies were paying a fair amount of money and none of them were getting the service that they wanted. So he sees all this money splashing around, thinks he can do it better, but he certainly doesn't have a burning passion to want to be a property manager. It's the dollars that grab him. If he did have that burning passion, my suggestion would be, rather than thinking about it and saying you can do better, go work for a property management firm, right? See it from the inside and learn the business from the property manager perspective, not from the property owner perspective. Understand the issues that they go through from their viewpoint, and then you decide if it's worth going into that business. And now you have seen it from both sides of the coin, the side of the owner, the side of the coin of the property owner, and the side of the coin from the property management firm.
Yep, and that's the proper way to plan something,
mm-hmm.
right? If that's part of his goal, or hopefully that's for life purpose, right? 'Cause
correct.
If it's just going to suck up your time and you're working it for money, then at some point you'll recognize that it doesn't meet the goals.
It's a job.
Long term.
Yeah, it's a job.
Yeah.
It's a job where you've got the responsibility. You got to meet payroll, mm-hmm. and you know you can't. If something goes wrong, you go, well, let me just take the afternoon off.
Yeah.
It's yours. And if you say, well, I'm going to put management in there, well, you get enough people in there, there's not enough money left over for you, the owner.
Yeah, I mean, I think ever since I understood the capabilities of the stock market or the opportunities in the stock market and what it can provide, it was tough for me to want to start businesses for money.
Yeah, exactly.
Because growing up, I just always had a lot of ideas of things and, you know, just ideas of what I could sell, what I could do as a business. And it always gets shut down because I'm like, all right, I know I got to do these things. And then, okay, at the end of the day, what am I trying to do? Go have time so I can, enjoy my life.
Yep.
Not be tied to the business. But if I went and did that, I would be stuck with it.
Correct. Right?
And then, or at some point, sell it. And then, what are you going to do afterwards? Still manage money.
Yeah.
So it didn't make any sense from a time freedom and, from what I want to do with my time.
But now that doesn't say you will never start a business. What you said was to start a business that you're doing it
for money.
For money. If you're doing it because you love doing it, totally different story.
Yeah, to pay the bills, correct.
Because if you look at it from a paying the bills perspective, unless you have this great idea about coming up with the next Facebook or the next, hot chip design or whatever it might be, but just on something to pay the bills, you can make that money plus in the market. And it doesn't take nearly the time and none of the headaches. And that's what's cool. That's the discussion I had with the guy in Detroit. He said, because you really brought up a good point on the trading side for a business owner, is it not only is it not jail with a door, but there's no employees, there's no sales, there's no customers, there's no warehouse space, there's no inventory, there's no payables, there's no receivables, there's no insurance, there's no anything. A little corner of the back bedroom or, a corner of even the kitchen, if you want, or a dining room. To put up a few monitors with a PC there, and that's it. And you're in business. You're off and going. You can't just go buy a PC and set up and do that. It takes time to learn how to do this. But once you have the know-how, that's in essence all you need. And he's like, I love that idea. I love that idea.
Yeah, so a key message is don't start a business to achieve time freedom. But achieve time freedom first, then start a business.
Correct. And do it because you love the business, not because you're doing it for the money.
Yeah, you see Elon Musk, right? He's spending his time freedom doing the things that are meaningful, purposeful for him.
Well, of course. He smokes a cigar and gets high at the same time on a podcast.
Exactly. That's time freedom, man.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly it. That's exactly it.
You know what? Is he the only CEO of a... what's Tesla? I mean, they're like, 70 billion, at least, or of that size public company that has done that?
Publicly? Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I bet maybe he's the first CEO ever.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know, Tilray might have done it, right? A week ago they're at 300, now they're at 100, but I don't know if that CEO came out and said, hey, here's my product, let me show how well it works. But, you go back on the property manager thing, just as I was thinking it through, kind of the ideas on the podcast, stuff to talk about, it to me is an interesting, what's the right word? Philosophically, it's an interesting business because who really is the customer if you're a property management firm? The property owner is the one that's, paying you 7% of the rent. So on one hand, they're the customer. But on the other hand, the customer is the tenant because they're the ones that are actually providing the money that goes to the owner then that goes on to you. And so it's an interesting thing. It's like, well, who gets the priority? Is it the owner calls, the property owner calls, or is it the tenant calls? It's just, I was thinking about it, it's like, ooh, it's an interesting, you know, because if the tenant moves out, granted, you're dark for a month or two and you bring in another tenant. So it's not just tenant A or tenant B that's more important, but the tenants as a group.
I didn't know property management can get that sophisticated.
But I mean, we know a couple of them, right? And if you listen to the issues that they talk about from their perspective, mm-hmm. right? And you know, they're you look, if you're a property manager, how do you make money, right? You're collecting a portion of the rent, but then I'm assuming also, and I don't know if this goes on, but I would assume it does, is when they bring out a plumber, you know, the plumber's going to charge them $30 an hour. Is the property manager going to pad the price a little bit? So he's going to bill the owner $35 an hour. And if you and I got the plumber on our own, it would only be $30 an hour or whatever that rate is. So I'm assuming there's a little bit of padding going on. On the one hand, you could say, well, he probably should do that because he's having to spend his time to do that. But it's
not inclusive in that monthly fee.
Correct. Yeah. And it's only once.
So yes, you know, you can have it a la carte or a package or however you want to structure the pay. Mm-hmm. I think if the marketplace is, you know, what it is, it's tough to find a good property manager based on his expectation. It's for a reason, I think.
Yes.
And, you know, I think everything has a price. And so if you want to, you know, be above, provide a supreme service above the market or your competitors, then you're probably not going to be able to do it in a cost-effective way.
Yes.
That you can compete based on price. And so, you know, you can be a great property manager, but if your price is too high, then people aren't going to go with you. Mm-hmm. Right? You price yourself out in the market. So, you know, I don't think he's onto something new here.
No. You know, you go read the, or listen to the, you know, there's podcasts, there's all kinds of books about, hey, if you're going to start a business, you know, in the entrepreneurial mindset, you go find a need in the market, whether it's a product, a service, or whatever, to address the need. And what's interesting on this thing, on this situation, is he's got the problem of I'm going to call it a poor property manager. And so his solution is to go fix the problem by becoming a better property manager himself. But what he's doing is not fixing the problem. He's creating a whole new, bigger problem for himself. Because now it's not just his issue with his property or properties. Now he's got 5, 10, 15, 20 other clients that he has to deal with. And they all have the same set of concerns that he does. And so he's multiplied his property management headaches by the number of doors that he just has taken on. And so we kind of alluded to it before. Maybe the better solution is to identify what the problem truly is. Right? He thinks the problem is property management. But the problem is really, it's a never-ending problem in the business he chose to be in real estate. Right? He's got a rental property and it always requires management. It always has and it always will. So the solution to make the problem go away, as you alluded to, is you sell the business. Right, and what you do is you look to and invest in a business that already has a management team in place. Right, it's called a public company. If he wants to be in real estate, go buy into a real estate investment trust.
I think it was like a punch in his face when you told him that.
Yeah, at first you could tell he didn't like it, but then he thought about it like
it made sense.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah,
makes a hell of a lot of sense.
Yeah,
and it doesn't take his time.
Yeah, and it's always very tough to tell someone who's, you know, just got into a business and, you know, they're excited about it and you're telling them, hey, don't or sell it.
Yes.
Right. Did I share on the podcast about the friends who bought the Quiznos?
No, you didn't.
No? Yeah, maybe I've talked maybe outside of the podcast, but years back, I think, I don't know if you know, there's any Quiznos around still. Subs sandwiches.
Mm-hmm. I know what it is, but I'm not sure if they're around or not.
Yeah. So, but you know, and if you're not in California, right? I think they're more in California. but
it's like a subway. It's a
similar like a subway. To subways, a little bit more, you know, on the meat side, and you know, the franchise. And so years ago, a friend of my, my brother, and I knew him kind of growing up as well, and ran into him, and he said, "Hey, just started at Quiznos, or, you know, around the corner, you know, where I was living," and. And went over there, and I kind of asked him, "What, you know, why did he buy Quiznos?" And he said, "You know, he was managing at a retail, electronic retail location, and he said, you know, he's working for people, he's got management skills, and he's like, why is he, you know, putting his management skill doing something for another business?" And he says, "Why didn't he just manage his own business?" That was his logic, and he's always felt, you know, more, I guess, seemed there was like a pride or a confidence there that, you know, would, you know, he would have. Owning a business.
Responsible for his own destiny.
Yeah. So he felt very proud, very excited. He just bought it. And then we talked a little bit through the numbers. And, you know, it was really, you know, he and his wife quit their full-time jobs, running a Quiznos 7 days a week. And they spent, I think, like 12, 14 hours a day.
Okay.
Right. And they're going to make like $60,000 between the two of them.
And my guess is they were each making probably more than 60 before.
Exactly. No benefits, nothing, no vacations.
Yep.
And, you know, his thought was, hey, I can grow this because it wasn't managed well. And he had no idea about, you know, hey, that you just, there's just within a certain area around your store.
How many sandwiches right? can you sell?
Exactly, right? That you can grab. People aren't going to, you know, drive 10 miles to your restaurant. Right.
Wait, Chris, you don't drive 15 miles to go to a different subway?
No. Not when there's a Quiznos, right? You know.
Yeah, you go to the one mile, the nearest. Yeah. You go to the nearest one. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. So, you know, and I was trying to get him to understand the concept of having more time. This business is going to drive him nuts, and it's going to be very tough to grow. The only way that he was going to able to make more money was to buy another one.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then, you know, if you're not making good enough profit running this, you know, yourself, right, why would you buy another one? Right. You're just adding more headaches.
Correct.
If you're not making enough money running one, how are you going to make money, more money running two when you have to double that time?
Well, right? It's that
you're not available.
Yeah. If you want to, let's say you want to put a zero on it. Mm-hmm. If you want to make 10 times the income, you got to have 10 times the Quiznos. You can't have 10 times the hours in a day. So now you have to increase your staff, which then cuts into your profit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it doesn't work.
Yeah. So I couldn't tell him, go sell your business. I just said, you know, cool. You know, kind of try to support him, buy some sub sandwiches, right?
His income that year was $60,200.
Yeah. You know, I think I added, you know, maybe $100 to his profit over the course of the year, I guess. You know? And, I waited for about 6 months and then, you know, kind of caught up with him and the number hasn't changed. And then that's when I started getting into the details with him and encouraging him to consider maybe selling it. Maybe he could make a profit, you know, just kind of put it out there and see. And he didn't do it. It took him maybe another year. So he ran it for about a year and a half to 2 years. Then he's had thoughts of, hey, I want to sell it because he's getting tired of it. And then, you know, he and his wife, they, you know, decided to sell it. And they listed the place, I think, for about $120,000.
Okay.
The business. And I asked them, why did you price it $120,000? And they said, well, you know, we bought it for about $100,000 and we put some money into it. And we think, or the other Quiznos nearby are selling it for about $110,000, $115,000 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I told him, I go, okay, do you really want to sell it? Because if you really do, I would go ahead and, you know, list it for like $90,000. Right.
Yep.
Below what the lowest guy is selling for or listing it for, and just kids get out.
Yep.
And he didn't do it. He let it go on and on and on. And then I think a year passed by. He got sick of it and decided to list it down at 60.
Wow.
Or 80 or something, way below.
Yep.
and then he ended up selling it for 60. Right? Because my logic was, hey, if the other guys was, you know, they're going to have to lower their price when they sell it, and then
that's right.
And then you're going to get hit bit, right, with the lower prices, then you have to lower your prices.
Yep.
So why don't you be first to it? And this was around 2008, 2009. I mean, the economy wasn't doing so great at all, right? And it was struggling. And so, you know, he put in that 3-4 years of hard work, finally just wanted to get rid of it and sold it to the guy for $60,000. And I caught up with him, like ran into him at a restaurant about a few weeks ago.
As a customer, or does he own another one?
No. We were both eating at the okay. at this restaurant, and just out of the blues, you know, he came up and he's, hey, how you doing? And so I caught up with him, and they're so excited. They sold the business, and they go, so what happened? And he said, sold it for $60,000, and he was just excited that he was getting out, and he didn't, you know, he didn't secure the funding, and you know, basically, again, the guy put the down payment.
Oh no!
And the guy just the buyer never fulfilled the agreement and didn't pay the rest of it and just left it. He got sick of it and didn't bother with it and just left it too.
Wow.
And I think he was being sued for the lease or whatever. And I think he just filed bankruptcy or something.
Oh, Jesus.
It was a financial mess. But you know, here's a case study of, you know, someone who wanted to start a business, but didn't have a plan, didn't have an idea of what the overall goal was. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it led them back to just both going back to what they were doing, just working, saving, right? And I think they're just so scared of, you know, money being lost, and they're just now very conservative about saving, and they won't even look at investing.
Now, if it's interesting, if the I'm guarantee there's a listener now that doesn't know us, that's listening going, these guys are full of crap. They're just armchair Monday morning quarterback over this guy's bad luck, and they're saying they could have done it better and this, that, and the other. And the answer is, we learned this approach because of trading. What you just described, Chris, I think you know it. I'll say it, but everything you just described there, you put money in something, it's working, it's not working. After mm-hmm. a while, you're like, close the trade. Doesn't matter if you're going to make money, lose money, close the trade.
Yep.
Get out, free up your mind, move into something else. And you don't hang on to try, well, like, you know, stocks at $100 a share and get to 101.
Mm-hmm.
Close the trade. If you got to get out at 99, 98, 97, get out.
Yeah. And now, I mean, this guy is emotionally, you know, caught in this business.
He's so focused on the money. He's not focused on the process. You got to focus on, and this applies in business, applies in trading specifically. You focus on the process. And if that says get out, if you take, you know, if you get less money than you wanted out of it, deal with it. But mm-hmm. now you have cash. And now you can go, you think clearly, you think a lot more clearly, the stress is gone. And now you go look for a different opportunity and move it into that. And if you find an opportunity tomorrow or in 3 months, doesn't matter, you move it in.
Yeah, you think about it as a trade, right? Because you, as you're buying this business, you have to understand, is this the business you want? Is this the right business? Why? And then once you understand it's not the right business or you're ready to sell it, how are you going to sell it? In his situation, he's selling it in a down market.
Mm-hmm.
And so same thing when you trade a stock, when you're selling in a down market, sometimes you may have to give a lower price to the market maker so you can get out.
Yes.
If you're trying to chase a higher price, or you're trying to put your price between the bid ask, right, while it's going down, you're not going to get filled. You may end up at a much lower price by the time you get out.
Yep.
That's what had happened to him.
Yep. So it's just, and the difference is in the stock market, it moves fast.
It's trading. Yep.
It moves very fast. So you learn, you develop a, I don't know if it's a discipline, the mindset or whatever. It's like, oh, I can just move quick and be out and mm-hmm. be done.
Yeah. You don't get emotionally attached to, you know, what you're doing.
It's all about the process. But when you see people in real estate or business sales and that, so focused on, well, I should hang around. I can get an extra few dollars out of this thing. Like, if you learn the stock market, you learn to be nimble and quick, and you're not in there trying to squeeze out the last penny or nickel out of every deal.
Mm-hmm.
You take a chunk out of the middle, go on to the next one. Get a chunk out of the middle, go on to the next one. And you don't worry
about it. If you happen to get out at the top or the very optimized price, then, you know, that's just luck. Cool.
It's just luck. Yeah. You had no idea it was, you won't know it's the top until at some point, future point later down the road, you look and go, oh, look at that. Never went any higher.
Mm-hmm.
That was me. I read something the other, just in fact, I think it was earlier today. I was going to try and click on here, but the keyboard will make too much noise while we're talking. The guy was talking about, I suppose I could pause here and put it in.
What, recording?
Yeah. Let me see if I can find it real quick, if I can remember what that thing was. It was basically, well, I can probably talk about it. This guy had a, trying to think of the website and what he had in there, but basically he was saying, when you look at making an investment in something, it boils down to three rules. What's the most I can lose? What's the most I can gain? And what am I going to learn? And everything boils down to that. So if you're trying to say, well, should I buy this? Should I buy that? Should I invest in buy this? Whatever it may be. Everything boils down to three questions. What's the most I can lose? What's the most I can gain? Mm-hmm. And what am I going to learn?
Yeah, I think what you're going to learn should be included. That's part of what you're going to gain.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. But sometimes you look and say, all right, because maybe the reason you're doing it is the benefit is what you'll learn. Mm-hmm. But there's a friend of ours sent me a quote from a lady who runs or is very high up in an MLM business. And she makes millions of dollars a year. And I'm sure she has heard countless times people that are looking to join the MLM, and they go read the online reviews, and you know, people that weren't successful at it claim that it's a scam. And it's interesting because it's an incredibly highly regulated business. So it's far from being a scam. But her comment on there, her quote that's attributed to her was, people are worried about, you know, putting time or money into something, and they're concerned it's going to be a scam. And the question you have to ask yourself is, if it is a scam, how much will you lose? And if it isn't a scam, how much will you lose? In other words, if you choose not to do it, what's the opportunity cost? And when you look at it that way, the money you would lose if it were a scam is dramatically less than what you'll gain if it's legitimate. Mm-hmm. Everybody's focused on, oh, I could lose something if it's a scam.
Yeah.
They don't look at the other side and say, what if it's real?
Yeah, but they don't look at that when they buy a stock, right?
No, no, it's the opposite.
It's all about opportunities, what you can make when you buy a stock. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's total opposite thinking.
Yeah, and you hit it right on the nose. It is opposite thinking. We think the wrong way of the way we should be thinking at that point in time.
Yeah, and you hit it on that's really key. When I look at decisions, and that's how we observe trades in the stock market, is when we look at opportunities, is it's about risk and reward, right? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And then when I think through, where does that not apply? It applies in almost pretty much everything, Chris.
It's consistent.
Yeah.
It applies in anything.
When you make decisions,
you
just look at risk and reward.
Yep.
It's the pros and cons. Right. And then once you can have a gauge where the risk makes sense and the rewards make sense, then you make that decision.
Exactly.
When they don't, you don't.
Yeah, I found the quote here. Maybe we can talk more on this. The price for skepticism is much higher than the price for being scammed. When you're scammed, you lose once. When you're skeptical, you lose all the time, because you lose out on all the opportunities.
Yeah, right.
And it doesn't mean that you jump into everything that you hear about. You got to go into it with the risk-reward perspective, as you were just saying. But you have to look at that and say, if it really is a scam, you're going to lose once. You say, what's the worst you can lose? You lose your entry fee or whatever it costs you to do it. But if you're skeptical on everything that you look at, then you're going to miss out on... Obstacles are going to show up all the time, and you're going to trip over those and never see the opportunity.
Yeah.
But if you have your mind open, you'll trip over opportunities all over the place. Because I said this, we had a session yesterday, you know, you stop and realize this, we live in the richest country on the face of the earth, and we live at the richest time in history in the richest country on the face of the earth. And Chris, you and I happen to live in probably the second richest area, maybe the third richest area in the country, in Southern California. You could argue maybe Northern California might be up there, or maybe New York. But between those three areas, we live in an area that's got incredible opportunity. But even if we lived out in the middle of podunk nowhere, the opportunities in this country are phenomenal. They're all over the place. You just have to open your eyes.
What if you have debt and you don't have a good credit score, Chris?
So
how are you going to make it in life?
If you're wondering what that is, we had both read a couple articles on CNBC. And I'm sure I was about to send it to him. He was about to send it to me. It's like, don't send it. I'm reading it. And this lady has, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. Like, oh my God.
And yeah, that's, I think we'll discuss that in a different episode, that will tie more around, you know, what we talked about before. Should you go to college and the whole loan crisis that we're having, right now, right, in as a nation.
Plus how not to think.
Mm-hmm. It's not to think.
It's also risk reward. You know, say the risk, or it's a cost reward, cost benefit. You know, if you go take out a big student loan to get a teaching credential, could you have gotten that teaching credential at a state college and paid a few dollars? Did you really need to go to the top private school in your area to get something that you could have just as easily have gotten? And they don't pay you anymore from a salary perspective if your degree came from this university or that college.
That plaque won't look as good with that college name on my, you know, wall.
That's true, because on college day in school, you know, I wear my alma mater shirt, so it's cooler that I wear one that has a foo-foo name on the university as opposed to, you know, local state school. But, you know, if you're going to go be a government worker, there's nothing wrong with that. Go and be a teacher, nothing wrong with that. Do you really need a degree from a high-end private school? Mm-hmm. And the answer is probably not.
Yeah.
But that goes back to how to think.
What were you thinking when you went to a high-end private school?
You know, I didn't know the difference.
Yeah.
I've thought about that a couple times. Like, if I had to do it over, would I go there?
Yeah. And you didn't pay for it.
I paid for some. I actually paid for about half of it.
Grad school?
No, IBM paid for grad school. That was okay. Cool.
I get but undergrad, you paid for half.
I paid for about half of it. Yeah, I worked. Mm-hmm. Had some other stuff going, so I ended up paying for it. Maybe it might have been a quarter of it, but at least somewhere in the quarter to half range.
You could have gotten to Time Frame a little earlier if you went to Long Beach State. See?
That's true. Although, I don't know. It'd be interesting. I don't know if I would have been hired by IBM. I don't know if they went recruiting there. And I didn't have enough foresight to go knock on the door of IBM and say, hey, hire me.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it does make you wonder. It's like, what opportunities would have... How would the opportunities have been different had I gone to like a Long Beach State versus USC or versus, you know, UCLA or whatever the school around there I might have thought about doing?
Mm-hmm. You probably would have started with Cisco or something.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? Have no idea. So, but you can't worry about the woulda, coulda, shoulda. Play the cards you put in your hand and dealt.
It's what do you do going forward?
Correct. So, any other comments for us? Young master?
No, are we done?
I believe so.
Oh, really?
So that's all I had. Anything else you had on your notes?
A couple of things. I mean,
please.
It's just some scenarios why, you know, if you think about looking at, people should start observing more around them, right? Why people start businesses. And it's really because they're chasing the dollars. And they think that, you know, somehow they're going to have, their life is going to be better, or they're going to make more money. And, you know, it's going to be much more rewarding than having a job. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens usually is the same case is they end up working a lot more, having more stress and less free time. Right. And then, you know, and that's if the business succeeds.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. I was also talking to a friend, and he runs a little Amazon business, and he and his wife, they're not employed. So actually they just work for themselves. So, you know, small Amazon business, and, you know, they just really love the flexibility they have. And so they can go to Disneyland or something on a Tuesday or a Wednesday or something like that in the middle of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, which is cool. So they, you know, I was talking to him, and he said, "Yeah, you know." I said, "At what point will you get to the, you know, time, real time freedom where you don't have to manage your Amazon business?" And he said, "Not, you know." He kind of understand that it's not, it's just temporary. And then he told me that, you know, at some point, you know, he's got to do something different to get his money working, and but he doesn't want to give up this time freedom that he has. And then I go, "Do you really have time freedom?" Right?
Correct.
And I said, "What you're doing is you're just borrowing time freedom from your future, because you're not working towards anything that would take your money and work for you."
Well, he's just taking a vacation. He's taking a Saturday, Sunday during the midweek.
Exactly. He's just not working as hard in his business.
Yep.
So he's just kind of getting by where the business is just making enough, you know, pay the expenses and all that, and I have some time. So he's thinking that's time freedom.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying, no, you're just taking some time off to do, you know, but there's no long-term solution. And if you couldn't go on for 2 weeks or 2 months.
Yeah, could you go away for 2 months and exactly. still have the income stream coming in the same? The answer is no.
Correct. And so, you know, he and his wife thought that, you know, they could do this business on the side and be able to have that time freedom, but it's not. You're borrowing time freedom from your future.
Goes back to the money triangle, mm-hmm. right? Where you can either work in a business, work for the business, or own the business. Am I say that right?
Yeah, so, be an employee, so the next time the for any of our listeners, if you decide to, if you have an idea or a thought of wanting to start a business, think, you know, go back and listen to this episode and think through why you want to do it. Where does that fit in the money triangle?
Mm-hmm.
And what's the end goal or end result of doing this beyond, you know, just the money flowing in?
I think there's that aspect of it. And also, if you're running it and it's either you're just starting out or if it has been running for a while, I was like thinking about it. Okay, how would I 10X my business? What steps do I need to do to basically add a zero to profit and sales? And can it be done with the current structure? You know, what does it take to multiply the business? And when I think of it that way, it always takes me back to trading. Because once you know how to do that, growing it, you just add and push another button on the keyboard. You know, add a zero to your trade size, or, you know, change it from one share to two shares, whatever it is that you're purchasing.
Yeah, you buy more shares.
Mm-hmm. But on the, you know, if you're a dentist, right, if you want to double your practice, you either got to put in double the chairs, double the clients, or hire another dentist to work for you. But they're going to take a bit of the, so you might have to hire two or three dentists to get double what you're doing on your own. So it's an interesting, it really does open, once you get your head around trading and what you can do in the stock market, it really does open your eyes. It's an awesome thing, but it kind of screws you up, because now I look at other businesses like, nope, don't want to do that. Don't want to do that. I have no interest in doing that at all.
Yeah.
Which is awesome, but it's kind of funny because it makes you, it's not a negative skeptic, but it's a, you're a realist.
It's weird because sometimes it makes you think, man, am I a bum? I don't want to start anything.
No. Yep. Exactly. Which is what everybody wants to be. If you really ask them. You know, unless they have some driving passion to do ABC business, that's cool. But in essence, they're doing that because of the passion, which in a way kind of makes them a bum, because they're not doing it for the money.
Yeah, I mean, that's why you know, like I said before, is you want to get to time freedom and then go ahead and start that business. Kind of like you have this teaching business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? That's exactly
it. You know, it's meaningful, it's purposeful. You love spending your time doing it. Right. And it's a contribution to people.
Correct.
Right? It makes a difference. So it's not about, you know, not starting a business, but doing it for the right reason, where it does, you know, meet your purpose or meet what you're trying to do in life.
Yeah. It's awesome to help people, and you're doing them a service. I don't know what the right way is to say, doing them a favor. That sounds really arrogant. I don't mean it that way. You're providing something that people want, and you love doing it. And they love the ability to get that service? God, I sound like a prostitute when I say that.
No, basically, it's getting the education. I mean, you know, if you're providing value information, mm-hmm. right, people are more than willing to listen and learn and pay for that.
Yeah, because you right? got someone that has the know-how. You definitely want to hear that from someone that has the know-how. Save you the headaches of learning to do it on your own.
Mm-hmm.
So, but again, not doing it for the dollar. Certainly end up getting paid for it, but I'm not doing it for the purpose of the dollar.
Yep. No. So get to that time freedom first, and you know, whenever you have that itch to want to start a business, think again and really understand why, and that should help you be comfortable with your decision.
Well, that and do it around your purpose,
mm-hmm.
because then it's not work, and it doesn't matter if or how much you get paid because you're doing it because you love it.
Oh, before we tune out, well, you told that other example. Have you heard from that one guy that started a restaurant franchise? One of the students?
The barbecue one?
Yeah.
I was thinking about him when you were talking about Quiznos.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we were supposed to see him yesterday. I think he'll be there in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
I haven't spoken to him directly other than I know he was... as thrilled the last time I spoke with him as he was way back when.
Yeah.
And that would be not very thrilled.
Yeah. I mean, when I spoke with him, it was like a broken record kind of. I was like, wait, I heard this story before somewhere. And that was my Quiznos friend.
Yeah. The short story on this, we've got a mutual friend who started a barbecue restaurant here in Southern California. And it took longer to get it open through whatever type of environmental delays and construction delays and whatever other delays he had to get the thing off the ground.
Franchise as well.
Franchise stuff as well. So he's paying rent on something that's not generating any revenue, right? So he's upside down or, delving into his cash reserves very quickly. Gets the thing launched and realizes almost instantly like, uh-oh, this is a full-time job. And if I bring in a manager, there goes my profit. But I don't want to
be more than full time. I think he's like 60, 70 hours.
Yes. Yeah. It's not, I guess true. It's not full time. It's all time.
Yeah.
So yeah. Instant realization, like, whoops, and it goes back to your points. Like, how do I get out of this as quickly as I can? Do I make it profitable and then sell it? Do I just say screw it and try and sell it without? I mean, that was kind of his looking at the various alternatives to try and exit.
If anybody's got a good business ideas for people to go do that will help them with time freedom other than trading, let us know. We'd be happy then to share it with others.
I'd either love to hear about it. Hell, I'd interview you too. If it makes a lot of sense, I'd love to hear about that idea.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And then bring the singing pig with you.
With lipstick, because you got to put lipstick on that pig.
Yeah.
See what you're going to get. All right, you want to do the wrap-up or you want to try one or you want me to do it?
Oh, no, you can wrap it up.
You sure?
Yeah. I'm going to be harsh.
I'll try it. Drew a harsh wrap-up. See what happens.
No.
So if you keep listening to the podcast and enjoy this, you'll find we have a firm belief and understanding that if you'll put into practice what we've talked about on this episode, on prior episodes, and I'm sure on fewer episodes, future episodes, you'll get to the point of what we call Tuesday waves. And Tuesday waves or time freedom. And time freedom is signified by waves on a Tuesday. You go down to the beach on a Tuesday, there is nobody there. And the waves sound phenomenal. They are so much better than any waves you'll ever hear on a weekend when you got to share that sound with the rest of the world down there enjoying their Saturday and Sunday. So do what you can, whatever endeavor you're pursuing, real estate, stock, Amazon, if you're working in a Quiznos, or if you want to do a property management business, but do what you need to do to get to the point of time freedom, because it is an absolutely awesome spot to be. With that, we appreciate listening, and we'll look forward to speaking to you next time.